Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Breaking the Lines podcast. I'm your host, Zach Lowy. We've got Oma Akatuba on. Thank you for coming here. And soon, Cristiano Oliveira will be here. Thank you so much, Oma, for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, good to be here. Really looking forward to, discussing some of the very topical issues in the very exciting world of football.
Yeah. So before we get into the sports, I want to discuss kind of a non-sports issue that has something to do with sports, because I feel like it needs to be talked about, and it's the issue of racism in football. Last Sunday we saw Montari racially abused by Cagliari fans. And Saturday we saw Mehdi Benatia perhaps racial abuse on television. So I'm not saying it's limited to Italy. I definitely think that it extends throughout Europe. But yeah, where are we with racism at football? Is it still a huge part? What's going on? I want to get your perspective as a Nigerian journalist.
Well, first and foremost, racism is a big problem of society,
Yeah.
and football is just a small part of society. Unfortunately, I don't think that any progress have been made in terms of stamping racism out of football.
Yeah.
And why? I mean, the reason is not far-fetched. I think the world has failed in terms of basically eradicating racism from our daily lives. I'm a black person. I live in Europe. I experience racism at all levels, just because I have become thick, I've become basically psychologically above racism. That's the reason why I hardly talk about it.
How do you become
Because
psychologically above racism, though?
yeah, it's something that I decided personally to ignore every attempt, of being racially looked down on or racially insulted or what have you. I have made up my mind to close my mind
So if
and
somebody looks down on you, they're looking down on you because you're you, they're not looking down on you because you're black. I mean, I just want to get your perspective on how you feel psychologically superior to racism or above racism.
Yeah, first thing first, you really have to know someone before you decide where to place the person, because we're all human beings. You kind of respect people based on who they are, what level of society they belong to. You understand me? So, but when you are of a different color, and someone who know you starts to, behave somehow funny, or starts to, relate with you or treat you in a very with disdain, it's difficult not to think that it's racism, because this person doesn't know you. He doesn't know your background. He doesn't know who you are. Maybe you are the richest man in Africa, but he doesn't know that. Or you are the most successful engineer from Africa, but this guy is seeing a black person, and for him, anything black is bad, anything black is low level. So, because of that mentality, he finds it hard to even respect you, even after discovering who you are. He still begins to wonder, how come this guy is this? I don't expect him to be this. I'll give you an example. I attended during the Larios World Sports Award, the same award where I was able to interview Anthony Joshua. We had a series of press conferences with Lewis Hamilton in attendance, Novak Djokovic, Carles
Djokovic.
Puyol. Yeah, Novak Djokovic, Carles
Legend.
Puyol. Yeah, legends. He was a knight of stars.
of course.
Fabio Capello, Cafu, Marcel Desailly, Raul Gonzalez. So in the room, I was the only black person, the only black journalist, which is always the case whenever I attended, whenever I attend Champions League games, most games, and even fellow journalists, you see sometimes how they are like, you see it in their faces. What's, I mean, like, who is this? What's he doing here? You understand?
Yeah.
You can see it. They don't say it, but you can feel it. Like, who is this guy? You know, like the time I attended press conference between Man City and then the game, before the game between Man City and Mönchengladbach.
Yeah.
The moment I raise up my hand to ask a question, you will see the room. Everyone is like,
yeah.
Really? He has something to say? You understand? That kind of look.
So for you, finish.
At this press conference, I asked Louis Hamilton three questions.
Yeah.
After every of my questions, before he responds, he says, good question.
Very patient.
The next question, he says, good question again.
Yeah.
The fourth question, he said, good question. Toto Wolff, I don't know if you know Toto Wolff, the Mercedes-Benz, is the manager of Louis Hamilton. He came to me after the press conference and said, your questions were very intelligent, because I did my research before the press conference. So after the press conference, a lot of the white guys were coming to me and saying to me, wow, you're so intelligent. With like, it's a surprise.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are you surprised? Am I not supposed to be intelligent? You understand?
Yeah.
You know, these are subtle way of looking down on you because you are not in quote white.
Yeah.
Which is something that is a huge problem for society. And football cannot solve a problem that is already endemic in societies across the world. Football can do a little bit, but it will be difficult for football to stamp racism out, because the person who is racial, who has come to the stadium to racially insult a whole football star, such a person is beyond redemption. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah,
if you come to enjoy entertainment, imagine somebody watching Jay-Z entertain him, one of the biggest entertainers in the world, and still has the tenacity or the effrontery to say, to make racial, to make racial to insult.
To
you about how bad it has been. And I think it's almost like a hopeless or a hopeless battle for those running football.
Yeah, I totally agree. And also, I'm glad you brought that up about journalism, because I think that with the players, it is pretty 50-50 in terms of black and white players. In fact, I would honestly say that it seems like many, if not most, of the best prospects in football right now are black, such as Mbappe and Ousmane and Diawara. But what you need is the middleman, the media. I think you need more Africans and African Americans in media, because those are the people who really take the issues and deliver them to the people. They're the middleman, and you can't have a media with a mainstream media with 90% of them being whites or Latinos. I think that you need more diversity. It's not enough to just have diversity in football, because I think there will always be diversity in football. But yeah. Hey, Cristiano Oliveira is here.
What's going on, guys?
Omar, do you have anything else to say? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me quickly welcome Cristiano Oliveira to this platform. Good to be able to discuss football with you. My name is Omar. I'm talking from Germany. Nice to be with you on this platform.
Yeah. Pleasure's all mine, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, so let me quickly comment on what you just said. That's a very key issue as well.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, as journalists, yes, journalists are supposed to be dispassionate. Journalists are supposed to be unbiased.
Mm-hmm.
But whether you like it or not, journalists are first human beings. And every human being has got sentiment. Every human being has got bias. That's why when people analyze, it's difficult For example, you cannot ask Zidane about Ronaldo and Messi, and he says to you, Messi is better, even if he agrees in his in private.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you get my point?
I totally understand.
Also applies to journalists. The white guy would like to elevate, for example, an average white footballer ahead of a very talented black footballer. Kelechi Iheanacho is an example. One very talented young football star, but for one reason or the other, is yet to blossom at Manchester City.
Mm-hmm.
And most times when he is rated alongside other upcoming young stars in Europe, even though the records, you know, are there to show that he's one of the brightest prospects in Europe at this point, except that, you know, Pep Guardiola have not helped his craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see that they try to downplay his quality because he's from Africa, he's from Nigeria. But if Kelechi Iheanacho was from Germany, for example, from England, oh my God.
The hype would be incredible.
He will be regarded as the next Ballon d'Or candidate. So that's a very valid point. Black or journalists from, you know, different race should play major roles as well, because
of course,
you know, the sport business is controlled by, I don't want to be sounding, you know, or color biased, you understand?
Yeah.
The sport business is controlled by the white people. Yeah. The media is controlled by the white people. The economy is controlled by the white people.
Mm-hmm.
So that also tells in this way the stories of the players from different parts of the world are told. You understand? So yeah. I agree with your point, and it's a very valid point.
Great. Thank you for that enlightening discussion, Omar. So Cristiano, though, I want to just give a formal
welcome.
What did
I just jump into, man? What's going on?
Hey, it was a kind of disturbing week, in my opinion, for fighting
Italian
racism.
Italian football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. As an Italian myself, I mean, I know the beautiful side of Italy, and I know the ugly side too well. But yeah, we can only hope that, like Omar said, it we need to improve it.
Man, that's a part of football that none of us like, and it happens not just in Italy. It happens in Portugal, where I'm from. It happens in Spain. It happens in the United States. It happens all over the world, unfortunately. And hopefully, you know, some people have the common sense to knock that crap out of the game, and those that are around watching people with those dumb chants, I hope that people are smart enough to interject and you know, at least tell authorities and get rid of these people and try to get rid as much of that as possible from the game. I think that's the right way to go about things.
Can I ask you a question, Chris?
All day.
Yeah. Do you think there is hope in terms of stamping racism out of football? Do you think there is really hope, or it's just going to be same old story of one campaign or the other from footballers, from UEFA and FIFA, and at the end of the day, the guys who perpetrate this dirty act of racism will still continue?
Look, unfortunately, I don't think you're going to be able to get rid of it altogether. I do think that, you know, people will get better. I think, you know, you see a lot of different nationalities, a lot of different cultures now. It's not what it used to be back in the days. Now people are mingling with each other a lot more. And I think as the younger generation comes up, I think, you know, races now, black and white and all, and Hispanics and Asian, all that stuff, it's more accepted now than it's ever been before. And it's only going to get better. But unfortunately, Omar, to answer your question correctly, I don't think you're ever going to be able to get rid of it altogether, because there's always going to be a fraction of bad apples. You know, in every tree there's a bad apple. You know, the key thing is to try to get rid of as many bad apples and not put them in the basket that's getting shipped to the supermarket, right? Keep those bad apples aside and try to do the best job possible of doing that. I think that's the only way to do it. But it'll get better. I just don't think you'll ever be able to get rid of it, because you can't control everybody.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that with, just as a general discussion, with all that's come from globalization this century, I do think that there has been some increased opposition to immigrants, but I do think in general racism has declined a little bit, even though it's still such a huge part. But I think that as people start to intermingle and realize that people of other races are really people,
look, throughout
you know,
history,
it's gonna get better. Yeah,
throughout history, if you look at the sport, right, it's sports in general, it's been the best way to get other races to interact with one another. I mean, racism, the best weapon for racism has always been sports, because absolutely, it don't matter your color, exactly, don't matter your nationality, don't matter your background,
as long as you get the
if
game,
you're good, yeah, you're going to play. And you'll see people, white people in Italy, supporting black athletes when they're on their team. Unfortunately, when they go on the road, it's not the same, you know, it's not the same thing. But it happens in every country. It happens all over the world. But the best way to tackle racism is through sports, man. Because when I'm on, yeah, the field with somebody, I don't, exactly, care what nationality you are. You know what I mean? That's politics. That's stuff outside the field. But on the field, I don't think you know, you guys were talking about Hinacho before. I don't think David Silva looks at Vincent Kompany and says, I'm not passing on the ball because he's black, or vice versa. You know what I'm trying to say? You know,
exactly.
On the field, yeah, guys, you know, there's no language, bro. The language is football. The language is the sport. And so I think that's the best way to tackle things is, you know, leave the politics to the dumbass politicians and let's worry about what happens inside the four lines.
Let me just add to what Cristiano just said. Just to add to what he said, I agree, and I think that, you know, sport, no, like we always say in Nigeria, is the biggest unifying factor in the world. You know, when it's time for football or sports, religious, racial, or ethnic differences, you know, take the back seat. And of, yeah, course, football becomes the one tool that unifies everyone. And like Mandela said, that sport has, yeah, the power to change the world. And we've seen it in many cases. We've seen how sports have, you know, bridged the gap between, you know, two nations. I remember Iran and the United States of America, if you remember, at the France 98 World Cup, in one of the games, you know, because of the history of unrest between America and, you know, the Cold War between America and Iran. Mm-hmm. We saw how that game at the World Cup, you know, created some moment of peace, you know, even though, yeah, you know, it was just ephemera, you know. But, you know, there's something that football does, and sports in general, you know, to a world that has become so bitter, to a world that has become so, you know, unpalatable because of the class of the, because of the dichotomy that have been created, you know, the class dichotomy, you know, that have been created by politics and religion, but, yeah, sports, you know, have been able to stand as a unifying factor, which also would play a key role in not just stamping racism out of sport itself, but also, you know, pushing it, you know, slightly away from the, you know, the front burner of society to the back seat. Which,
hey, Omar, let me ask you. Let me ask you a question real quick. Are you familiar with my friend Suleiman Folarin? He's also from Nigeria. Are you familiar with him?
Suleiman Folarin went through the same school of sports training.
That's why.
That I went.
That's why I'm asking if you know, because he's a really good friend of mine. And sitting here listening to you, I'm like, wait a minute, is this Omar or is this Suleiman? Who am I talking to here? You know what I mean? I'm like,
are you for you?
Yeah, that's I'm really good friends with Suleiman. I'm actually, once I get off this this pod, I'm gonna give him a call and I was talking. He's a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. And for a quick second, I thought you were him. I'm like, wait, somebody, you know, this guy's disguised in Omar.
That's very interesting. Suleiman Folarin is my friend. We both of us, you know, got some kind of training from the same person in Nigeria. There's a TV station called AIT, known as African Independent Television. Suleiman went through that platform. After I left for America, I also was part of that platform. And, you know, we've been in touch, you know, right from that moment on. He's my very good friend.
Yeah, yeah. You guys definitely can tell you got the same training because you sound a lot alike. So,
yeah.
And it's funny because he talks to me about Hinacho the whole time. And I get on the pod and the first thing you're talking about is Hinacho. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is Suleiman. Yeah, it's funny. It's actually small world, man. That's good.
Small world.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. Exactly. Great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, that's another thing that sports can do. Unify people from different corners of the world.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We've got Newark, yeah, Washington, D.C., and Berlin on the same show right now.
Exactly.
So yeah, really great discussion on racism, and
the power of the internet, man.
The power of the internet. The power of the power of the 21st century. Yeah, man.
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. It's so great. But yeah, to just to move on, Cristiano Oliveira, you know, professional, really professional podcaster, I'd say by now. You know, Sirius XM presenter, and also a major Benfiquista. So, you know, I've been doing a project on Breaking Lines for the past few days on Portugal. But, you know, it seems like, well, Benfica only have to take 2 points from the next two games to win the Tetra, you know, a historic fourth straight title.
Just to put that into perspective, real quick, before you go on, Benfica is a team in Europe. I believe they're the team in Europe with the most domestic cups, 35 league titles, followed closely by Real Madrid at 32. And out of those 35, in their terrific history, they've never won four in a row. So, just wanted to put that in perspective. This is history right here in the making. So, very, very big games coming up, and hopefully, you know, one of those games that we can celebrate that for the first time in our history and. Obviously, first time in my life as well.
Yeah. So, who is really who had the biggest say in determining this Tetra? Was it Nelson Semedo? Was it Rui Vitória? Was it the incompetence of Porto to not show up in against maybe some winnable games? What do you think? What was the major deciding factor?
I think it's a little bit of every single point you just made. I think Semedo. It's been absolutely fantastic for Benfica. I think his consistency at right back, his attacking flow down the right flank, his defending, he's gotten a lot better defending. Ederson, fantastic goalie who stepped in last year against Sporting once Julio Cesar went down with an injury. We're all freaking out. I mean, he's making his debut for Benfica, but as far as league debut. In a big game, in a big moment that Benfica absolutely needed to win in order to jump Sporting and you know, jump them and get into first, which they won their three Campeonato last season. Rui Vitória has been terrific with the, you know, calming the players down. He's the type of guy, I say this every week, man, because there's plenty of criticism for Rui Vitória as far as the tactical awareness. But as far as man management, the guy is tremendous. This is the type of guy, and I say this again, every week, if you have a daughter, he's the type of guy you want your daughter to come, you know, bring home. He's a terrific class act, the guy who manages egos and manages personalities tremendously, never throws anyone under the bus, never gets involved in any off the field bull crap that's going on in Portugal, because nowadays the news outside the field in Portugal is making a lot more news than, you know, than the actual play inside the field.
Definitely.
And so I think Benfica have had not a tremendous season. You know, it's not one of them dominating seasons we've seen from Benfica in years past. But Porto struggles. Sporting have struggled. I mean, think about it. Porto's tied, I believe, 5 of their last 7 games. So, obviously, opening up the window for Benfica to stay in first and win this title again this season. So, I think it's a bunch of little things that come into effect, and they're all come into play. And it's just, I'm happy that it's worked out this way for Benfica.
Yeah. And, you know, I said – before on my project about Liga NOS, you know, Vitória might not be better tactically than Jorge Jesus, but he gives the youngsters a chance, and that's really the determining factor between.
It is, but dude, man, like, this is an ongoing conversation we've been having since Jesus left for Sporting. A lot of it has to do with the club as well. I mean, there he had a veteran laden team, a lot of youngsters, but the youngsters that they were coming in at the time was kids from Argentina and Brazil, kids that weren't coming to play on the B team. Mm-hmm. These guys were coming in to play on the A team, and they were expected to perform. So I think he had a different responsibility than what Rui Vitória does. I think his job, and I'll forever be grateful to Jorge Jesus, he came into Benfica at a time when Porto was dominating Portuguese football. Over the last 25, 30 years, it's been all Porto. And so he comes in and he puts a stop to that. Yeah, he slipped up and we lost 2 Europa League finals to Sevilla and Chelsea. We lost Taças Portugal finals. You know, yeah, he's had his slip-ups. But at the end of the day, something and keep this team at a level right there with Futebol Clube Porto where we could go in and trigger and win some of these titles. So I'm forever grateful to him, but I think his job was totally different. I don't think he cared much about developing players. Jorge Jesus is about winning titles. Yep. He doesn't care if you're 40 or 10. As long as you're winning, that's what he cares about. Jorge Jesus comes in. Benfica sold a bunch of players that were not expected to challenge. I mean, realistically, yeah, in public, in a press conference, the president had to say that. I don't think anyone realistically believed that he was really going to challenge for a title. And so they told him, implemented the rules that, look, we want to develop youngsters because this is the path, you know, our road to the future with our club. We want to develop these guys and sell them. Kind of had guys fall into their lap. You know, Renato Sanches had a tremendous season. Semedo, I mean, we were panicking.
Lindelof had a good season.
Lindelof showed up in February.
Yeah.
All those guys that came in, terrific young players, but I hate the fact that people throw out Rui Vitória. If he knew they were that good, they would have been playing since day one. But look, tremendous job, Benfica, and he's got him on a roll for a second consecutive title under his leadership and, like, as we mentioned before, the Tetra.
The Tetra, exactly. Yeah, it is very impressive. And we'll have to see how they cope with what I think will be a mass exodus. I think that I can see Semedo and possibly Ederson.
Lindelof, Grimaldo, those four right there.
I don't know if Grimaldo leaves because of the injury, but I definitely see Semedo, Lindelof, Ederson. I think Benfica might be able to keep Grimaldo, but yeah, in terms of the others, I think they've still got a solid core, and just for me, they've been kind of one step ahead of everybody else. Whether it be, you know, getting the state of the art training ground placed back in 2006, to, you know, bringing in a manager who knows youth. Would you say they're the best run club in football? If not, who are? This question goes to both Cristiano and Omar.
Go ahead, Omar. Tackle it first.
I mean, that's a difficult question.
Who's the best run club?
I mean, I would not definitely say that Benfica, you know, is the best run club in Europe. But in terms of getting the best out of their players in the transfer market, you cannot look beyond Benfica, of course. From my research, I discover that between 2010 and 2016, Benfica made about 351 million euros from transfers. Mm-hmm. And whether I like it or not, football is big business. Every club wants to, you know, to rake in profit season in, season out. And Benfica, because of their model, they don't spend astronomic fees on transfers, but they sell players on huge transfer. I mean, and make a lot of money. And because of the connection of Portugal to Brazil, they are able to, you know, to storm these countries, get players who are looking for an opportunity to express themselves and expose themselves to the European market, get them for cheap, bring them to Portugal, give them the platform, you know, the environment, all of the facilities, and they show themselves in the Portuguese League and sometimes in the Champions League and the Europa Cup, and they move on to big things. If we continue, you know, some of the notable names, of course, David Luiz, who moved to Chelsea, Ramirez, who moved to Chelsea, Nemanja Matic, who moved to Chelsea as well.
Coentrão de Maria of Real Madrid.
Thank you.
Oblak to Atletico Madrid. Oblak, I mean, you could go on and on and on.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You could go on. Of course, you know, recently Renato, you know, Sanchez. So,
of course,
you know, on that front, I would agree that yes, one of the most meticulous in Europe, one of the most frugal, one of the most business minded in terms of, you know, cashing in on their players and making the best out of them. Yeah, I would agree on that. No, but saying that Benfica is the best run club in Europe might be pushing the envelope.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it might be.
I think it's safe to say that they're the best run club in Portugal. That I'll say, as far as one of the best, you know, and you know, you want to put them up there, one of the best front clubs in Europe, fine, but I don't know about the best. And to add to Omar's point, I mean, Benfica does a tremendous job of signing young players and developing them. I think right now, in my opinion, right, and I'm not being biased, I just going based on history and seeing what types of players have come and have left Benfica. Benfica, Porto, and Sevilla do as good a job, if not better than anybody else in the world, of getting players prepping them and getting them out to the bigger leagues and to the bigger teams in Europe. I mean, all three of those teams have a tremendous history over the last couple of years of developing players and selling them for tremendous sums of money to Europe. So, you know, everything's been working terrifically well for Benfica. They only Real, I mean, unfortunately, guys, I mean, there's some bad news in that. Only Manchester United has more debt in European football than Benfica at 500 and some. Benfica's in the 400s.
Wow.
So, unfortunately, that for myself, and, yeah, it is. It is. Wow. And unfortunately, for myself and a lot of Benfiquistas, it's a hard pill to swallow because, you know, we get the Nelson Semedos of the world, the Renato Sanches of the world. We start to fall in love with these guys. And before you know it, they have to ship them out and sell them in order to keep that debt in order, you know, and keep the payments. So it's tough being a Benfiquista, but as long as they keep winning and the titles keep coming, I mean, you're going to accept it, but it's definitely tough.
Let me just quickly add to, I mean, what you said, as regards Renato Sanches. There's an interesting fact or an interesting, you know, twist or an interesting story, you know, to Renato Sanches. And it says that Renato Sanches cost Benfica 25 pieces of footballs.
in a couple of coats.
And he used to take a boat to training as well, right?
Yeah. And to be received.
Well, they have to take the ferry to cross the river. Okay. Yeah, that's what it is.
If he signed a professional contract when he joined from childhood club, Agüeras Muzguera. I hope I got that right. And guess what? I mean, it's not a secret. He went for 80 million euros or he went for a transfer fee that would rise up to 80 million euros.
85 million if he triggers everything. I mean, he has to be a finalist for the team of the year. He has to be a finalist, three finalists for the Europa Golden Ball. I mean, it's, you know, the
But let me ask you, Cristiano, how do you think things are going with him at Bayern? Why would you rate
him? It was a good move for him because it's a prestigious club, you know, one of the best teams. Yeah, I'll explain to you why. I like Ancelotti. I like Ancelotti. I think Ancelotti is a good, you know, care of young kids. They have a history of developing players. Okay, I mean Bayern Munich. They buy. I mean, obviously they have the rest of the Bundesliga as their farm system.
Of course.
They buy these guys young, and they find a way to transform these guys into world class players. And this to me. Go back and listen to the recordings on Benfica podcast. This is not unexpected for me. I mean, you're gonna expect the kid to adapt and take a little, you know, a little bit to adapt to German football. He's going to a team that at that position, they have world-class players. Vidal, Alonso, Thiago, Kimmich.
Yeah.
They have so many guys that, you know, you could make the argument he shouldn't be playing over. So anyone that's surprised by his struggles really hasn't been paying attention. I mean, they have a terrific team. It's not like he's going to Birmingham and he can't play. Then I'd really be concerned. But he's got world-class players ahead of him. Next year, things will get better. Alonso's leaving, you know, which opens up a spot. He's going to get more experience. Now there's rumors that Inter Milan, Juventus, there's a bunch of teams, a bunch of sharks that want him out on loan. So I think he's going to develop, but things have been slower than anticipated. But at the end of the day, shouldn't really be surprised. He's going to take a hiccup along the way.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to go with Juventus for my best-run club in football because I think that, you know, I've been kind of riding the coattails of my prediction last year when I said that Juventus would win the Champions League. I'm going to look like a huge idiot if Real Madrid end up winning it in Cardiff, but I do think they are the best-run club in football. I said they'd win the Champions League because of this deeply held thought that they are the best-run club in football. And I want to say this. Among a lot of other things, I noticed this. Since their loss 2 years ago, less than 2 years ago, really, in Berlin against FC Barcelona, they have brought in European winners, people who have already held the Champions League trophy. Mario Mandzukic, Dani Alves, Sami Khedira, players who know what it takes to win the Champions League. And I think that's really a failure that a lot of perennially underachieving sports teams, such as, for example, in hockey, my Washington Capitals, they don't have enough winners on their team. So I do think that this is an underrated aspect you know, buying players who might be washed up, but they still know how to win. Is it really that important, or what do you think? To get that championship.
At the end of the day, I don't think it's a bad shout on your part at all, right? Juventus, yeah. La Vecchia Signora, the biggest team in Italy, you know, the biggest funds in Italy, a team that does a tremendous job of scouting. And again, I'm not trying to go against you, right? Yeah. But I'm just going to give you another alternative, another option, which to me, Atletico Madrid is just as good, if not more impressive, considering what they have to go up against week in, week out. A team that's made it to two good Champions League finals the last four. And they don't exactly – they have a big budget, but they're not – they're still finding a way to get in there and get into a fist fight in the rink and scrapple with the Barcelonas and Real Madrid, two of the best teams every single year, year in, year out, in the world. And they're in that conversation. So, look, not discrediting Juventus, but I think to say that they're better than – as far as running the club than Atletico – might be doing Atletico a little disservice, but I could totally understand it. But I think they're 1A and 1B right there, because Atletico deserves to be in that conversation with anybody, guys.
Yeah, I respect your point, but let's just look at the players that, you know, Atletico last year, they were a kick away from finally winning the Champions League trophy. Let's look at some of the players who they brought in after that devastating loss. Sime Vrsaljko, Nicolas Gaitán, Kevin Gamero, all great players, but are they going to win you the Champions League? I mean, I think that's part of the board's fault.
They are not exactly great players. They are decent players.
They're system players.
Yeah,
they're system players. Yeah, exactly.
And that perhaps have been the biggest problem, you know, of Atletico. Atletico have been built more on team ethic rather than individual brilliance. Atletico is not Real Madrid or Barcelona that have all the monies in the world to buy the best front three, the MSN, for example, or Real Madrid that can afford a Ronaldo and tomorrow buy Gareth Bale and get other players at support cast. Even James Rodriguez, I'm sure, is more expensive than every player at Atletico Madrid. And that same player doesn't play regularly at Real Madrid. So the problem is they try to be prudent. They try to spend within their means and still try to compete amongst the best, not only in the La Liga and in Europe. If you're able to rub shoulders with Barcelona and Real Madrid, you can do that anywhere in the world. Look at how Atletico have done consistently in the last three seasons of the Champions. They've only been knocked out by Spanish teams. If not for Real Madrid, I can tell you that Atletico can win the Champions League. Take out Real Madrid or even Barcelona. They've beaten Barcelona before. So you see that they have been able to, you know, manage what they have to build a team that have been strong enough. But when they come up against a team like Real and Barca with more money to buy better players, you see that they choke. Not because they are not a good side, but because they don't have the personnel like Real and Barca to go that extra mile. Because when you look at them against even teams like Bayern, they beat Bayern home and away.
I think you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what it is. They're good enough to beat everybody else. They're just going up against the two monsters. You know what I mean? That's their only fault. Had they been in the Serie A, they would have won a Scudetto. But they're going up against, you know, and they did win a La Liga. They're going up against the two biggest boys on the block week in, week out. But you know, listen, they're both two tremendous run clubs. I think Juventus, they have the experience. They have the guys there, the Chiellinis, the Buffons of the world, the Marquisios. You know, these guys, week in, week out, don't matter who it is that's coming from the outside, these guys lead by example. And, you know, they bring great talents, but they could add you and I, and they'd be just as successful because we're going to follow the lead of those great veterans.
Exactly. That's true.
I understand. And, you know, Vrsaljko is a good young right back. But, you know, Gamero, as good as he was at Sevilla, he's 29 now. And I just think that this Atletico team needed a little bit more of excitement, a little more of creativity, so they didn't have to go to penalties. So they could have, you know, maybe knocked out Real Madrid before. By the way, you know, I get that Atletico can never seem to beat Real, but Barca can never seem to beat Atletico in Europe either. to your point. But you know, Cristiano, did Gaetan ever convince you at Benfica that he was capable of taking this perennial underachiever that is Atletico Madrid to a European winner?
No, I mean, look, I'm a Benfiquista. I love Gaetan for what he did at Benfica. And I thought he would struggle at a club like Atletico, a club with a lot of other options. He's surplus. He's the type of guy, if you're counting on him, especially in a big league like that, if you're counting on him to carry you, you're going to be in trouble. But if he's just another guy on the field, guy that's going to get things done, he's world-class ability-wise. He's a tremendous player. He's got a terrific left foot. It's just a team like Atletico, a team that, even though they don't have those superstars that we're talking about with, like the other clubs do, they do have enough other wingers and enough of other players that if you don't hit it off in stride from day one, you're going to be behind a line, behind three, four guys now. And that's what's happened with him. There's too many other options. You have Carrasco, you have Jimenez, you have Correa, you have other guys that are capable and able to play at that position. So, a bit of a hard time. And I think eventually Simeone's going to decide to loan him out, unfortunately. But, you know, he's still a player. He's not old. He's 28. He's not, still has a good future ahead of him, but maybe not at a club like Atletico.
He's 28. I think they sell him rather than loan him.
Yeah, but are they going to get that money back? That's the problem.
Yeah,
they pay Benfica. They pay Benfica a nice chunk. Are they going to get that money back?
That goes back to Oma's point, where Benfica just know how to squeeze the most amount of money out of players.
If you're a club in Portugal and you're not thinking in that direction, then you're mistaken. Portugal is not among the top five leagues in Europe. Portuguese league is not as commercially viable as, let's say, the Bundesliga, the La Liga, let's not even talk about the Premier League. Even I think that the Portuguese league would not be as lucrative as more lucrative than the MLS. I might be wrong, but you know, if you do your research.
No, I don't think it's anywhere close. I mean, with the exception of Benfica, Porto, and Sporting, there's really no one else. I mean, Braga is all right, Guimarães is all right. But those three teams are the only teams that you can really market, guys. I mean,
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're a club in such a country, your thinking should be in the direction of FC Benfica. So what they are doing is the best business model for a club from a country like that. Because if you look at TV money going to Portugal, is not as high as Spain or England, Spain and even Germany, for example. So the clubs will have to look at, you know, business models that will work for them. And what Benfica is doing is brilliant.
It is. And guys, and let's not forget, though, the key here, even though I love what Benfica is doing, but the key here, guys, is it's not bad when you have Jorge Mendes in the room negotiating for you. The guy gets you whatever fee you want. I mean, Renato, you name it. Anyone that's associated with Jorge Mendes in Portugal is going to be sold for a ridiculous fee, whether he deserves it or not. I mean, you have Helder Costa at Wolverhampton, a guy who played maybe 2 minutes for Benfica, got loaned out to Deportivo, was on loan for the last 3-4 years, and I was just purchased for $15 million. And we're like, yeah, I'll take it. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, that's just Jorge Mendes' deal.
Yeah, yeah.
In your corner, you're going to make loads.
By the way, do you know who Mendes supports?
You know, Jorge Mendes, as I like to call him, or Jorge Mendes. Jorge Mendes was able to sell a footballer that was playing on the street to Manchester United, baby.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's the hallmark of a super agent. He can market anything.
He'll sell you a car and no motor and tell you it's running great.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes down to, we can talk about best run clubs, best run boards. But at the end of the day, I think that Jorge Mendes is what makes the footballing world go round.
It's easy. I think it's pretty easy to say he's the most powerful man in soccer.
Of course.
Yeah. Between Mourinho and Ronaldo, that's all you need. I mean, those two, people move mountains for those two. And then, I mean, he's got every single –
and it just keeps growing. It just keeps growing.
It does. Yeah.
Except that he doesn't have Messi.
That is true.
You know, listen, that's fine. He doesn't need Messi. He doesn't need Messi to be the most powerful man in soccer world. I mean,
yeah.
Messi doesn't need him either.
No, absolutely. But nobody's saying otherwise. I mean, Messi's Messi, tremendous footballer, and Mendes is Mendes, tremendous agent.
I agree with you. You
gotta respect that.
I agree with you. Yeah.
I think that maybe it's not – sometimes it's not what's best for the footballer, for example. I don't think that Di Maria to United or Renato Sanchez to Bayern was best for their specific careers. But it definitely was best for money, I'll tell you that. And
it was. But
Falcao to England as well. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Omar.
Yeah, I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. You see, they say money just don't speak. Money never shuts up.
Yeah.
Money keeps talking, you know. The game today is all about the money. They say money makes the world go round. Most of these transfers, I mean, who would turn down £100 million transfer fee? For example, Paul Pogba to Manchester United, Gonzalo Higuain from Napoli. Of course, it was a step higher. I don't know if I should say leaving Juventus to Man United is moving up. I don't know, but somehow those who are fans of English football will say, yes, it is a step, you know, upward. But of course, definitely Napoli to Juventus is a step upward.
Because I mean, look, Omar, all you got to say is Anthony Martial, $89 million to Man United. What the hell? I mean, that's highway robbery. I mean,
he wasn't even that impressive at Monaco. I mean, he's a great player, but $89 million.
I don't know about great play. He's a good young prospect. I don't know about a great player. Right, if he didn't cost them upwards of $80 million, I don't think anyone would be making much fuss about him. But the fact is, you spend that much money, you can't get rid of him. I mean, there's clubs that make bad deals all the time. It is what it is. Money, like Omar says, I mean, money rules the game. It is what it is. And you can't get upset when players making moves like, you know, you get a Falcao and a James Rodriguez and a João Moutinho. You all make the jump from Porto that summer to Monaco.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you scratch your head. You see a Hulk leave Porto and go to Zenit. And now Hulk go from Zenit, which was already, you know, obscure. Nobody even knows who the hell you are, to China. But at the end of the day, you can't be upset when these guys are going to make 5, 10, 15 times what they're making now. They do have families, and, you know, they got to take care of them. You can't hate on them. It doesn't – I don't like it much because I like to see the players, you know, show their competitiveness and want to battle it out with the best. But when you're making $1 million and somebody's willing to pay you 15, how the hell you turn that down?
Yeah. By the way, to your point, In that summer where James Rodriguez and João Moutinho both left Porto, that was the end of the Porto dynasty, and it did signal the beginning of Benfica's dynasty. That was the last title Porto ever won. Of course, you know, Benfica had that famous collapse, but it's still...
Oh, man, you got to stick that dagger in me, don't you?
Dude,
I almost drove off the road.
Come on, hey... Come on, four straight, man, four straight. You rule Portugal. I'd be pretty happy if I were you.
Yeah, but that 92nd minute goal by Kelvin. Oh my God, it's one of those things I have nightmares about.
Dude, I know. I feel the same with Chelsea Barcelona, but I mean, you got to move on. Four straight. That is incredibly impressive. So yeah, I do think that this Atletico side is kind of stuck in, shall we say, a positive rut. They're a European challenger. They're punching way above their weight. But I still don't know if Simeone can take this team any further than he already has. What do you think?
Yeah, but I don't think there's any other coach in the world that could take this team any further. I mean, Simeone's done a tremendous job.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, it's not their fault. It's not Simeone's fault that they play in La Liga. It's not their fault that they have to go up against Real Madrid and Barcelona with two of the biggest budgets in the world. Look up and down those rosters, world-class players at every position. I mean, what are they supposed to do? It is what it is. They're just hoping that they could surprise one of them in the Champions League and not have to face the Spanish side in the finals, and then hopefully they could lift, you know, move on to glory.
Yeah, but you know, Diego Simeone is still pretty young. He was actually, I mean, it's hard to believe he was born in the 70s. He's 47. He's got still a pretty long career ahead of him.
Yeah, but he's
And
leaving. He already announced it. He's leaving.
he already announced it?
Yeah,
Okay.
he's leaving now. He's leaving after not I think the 2018 season. He's leaving. Next season, I think he's gone. He's I mean that's been announced already.
Okay.
There's a lot of reports linking him to Inter Milan where he played at, but you
Yeah.
know, he's got 1 year left and
You
I
think
think
he'll so you think he'll stay for next season?
I think he announced it already. I think it's been announced that he'll leave
Oh,
after the
really?
2018 season. So I think
Okay.
next season will be his final in La Liga. They'll be cherished. They'll forever cherish his time at the club. I mean, they've worked magic over the last couple of seasons. Just the fact that they won a La Liga and they've been to the Champions League finals. I mean, and going up against stacked sides like the Real Madrids and the Barcelona, the Bayern Munichs of the world. You know, it's been phenomenal for that club. So now it's very interesting to see where he goes next. There's plenty of rumors of about his possible destination, but I guess we're all gonna have to wait and see. But I think Inter Milan, is the favorite because of his ties with the club.
I think that with also I think that Inter would be a good move, not just because it was where he spent many of his playing days, but also I do think that there's kind of that stigma around Atleti. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think they are the even the third biggest club in Spain. They certainly are now, but when you look at history, I think Bilbao and even Valencia have been more impressive. So I just don't think you associate Atletico with European giants. You do now, but there still is that pre-existing stigma that I think kind of is a cloud that shadows down on the Rojiblancos. And I don't think you get that with Inter. I think Inter's
I
are
think I think I think Bilbao might have a bigger following. I think they might have a bigger following, for sure. I think Valencia's got their history in the, you know, late 90s and early 2000s, but I mean, I think Atletico, after Real Madrid and
They're
Barcelona, I think
definitely the best.
they've
Yeah.
been, I mean, they won titles in the 80s and, you
But
know,
they're not a
seven,
European
nine, two,
giant
nine.
still. I
They
mean,
haven't been. They haven't been. Unfortunately, Gilly Gil ran that club to the floor for a while, and now they're back, you know, heading towards the right path. But it's just, I think for me, man, they're just bad luck on their side. I mean, they're stuck in a league. I mean, look, no one else in world football is beating Real Madrid and Barcelona. You know what I mean? Like, that's who's cleaning up the trophies over the last couple of years. Every single year. Look at the last 5, 6 years. It's been Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, and then an outsider as a semifinal, you know, as a Champions League semifinalist. So it's, look, there's just, it's been going bad for them. You know, it's bad luck. It's bad luck. But it's not because they haven't played well. It's not because they haven't, you know, built their roster well. Just bad luck, man. You keep going up against Barcelona, Real Madrid. It's a very tough battle for these guys. I mean, you put Atletico Madrid in EPL. You put Atletico Madrid even in the Bundesliga to go up against Bayern Munich, one team. You know, I think they would have come away with a lot more titles, especially, you know, in Serie A, Scudettos, all. But it's Real Madrid and Barcelona. No one else in the world's beating these guys.
Except for Juventus.
Well, we'll see. Well, Juventus, yeah,
No,
but
Juventus
that's,
already
look,
beat Barcelona,
no,
though.
that, no, we'll see what happens. That's 1 year, though.
Okay.
That's 1 year.
Okay. Fair
Yeah.
enough. Okay. Oma, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
So Atletico are in a positive rut. I want to talk about another team that is in kind of a positive rut, Tottenham Hotspur. So, second straight time, they challenge for the title, but they don't get it. Still, they're punching well above their weight, and I think that even last summer's transfer window did not impress me. They brought in the likes of Wanyama, Sissoko, Victor Janssen. I did not think this was going to be a club that would repeat Champions League qualifications, especially with Mourinho, Conte, and Guardiola coming in. But alas, here we are. So it seems like there might be some transfers. Alderweireld could leave. Walker could leave. Is this Tottenham project here to stay?
I mean, we've been talking about we've been asking these questions for many years, and it has become more like a question that that seems not to be, you know, not to find an answer. You know, that people are now saying or concluding that Tottenham are bottlers. You know, they give you, they raise your hope. You know, they give you that thinking that, yes, it's time for them to, you know, to break the status quo like Atletico Madrid did in Spain and win the EPL title. They get to the finish line and they just take their legs off the pedal, like what they have done again this season. After Manchester United, you know, blew the title race open by beating Chelsea, it was up to Tottenham to take advantage. But lo and behold, they lost to West Ham and gave Chelsea, you know, that lead again. And Chelsea, you know, beating Middlesbrough tonight looks like just one more game and they'll be coasting on with the title. So it's a difficult question to answer. We saw them in the Champions League last two seasons ago, if I'm not mistaken. And they were beaten by Real Madrid, you know, in a way that nobody expected, as a team coming from that English Premier League that we all thought is very competitive, and the teams are competitive as well. But what we've seen outside of England is beginning to make us feel that truly and truly the English teams are only competitive amongst themselves, but not truly competitive when they are outside of England, which is also, you know, also sometimes can boil down to the fact that, I mean, can also raise the question of, is the EPL truly as competitive as we think, or perhaps is it just exciting, you know? But talking about Tottenham, it will be difficult to answer the question whether Tottenham, the project, is here to stay or not. It's something that you've got to be careful about, because if you put your money on Tottenham, you might lose your hard-earned money.
Man, what Tottenham should be doing right now is praying to their lucky stars that Barcelona doesn't come after Pochettino.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would definitely take Pochettino at Barca. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, he's a tremendous coach. He's done wonders for that team. Yeah. And they have some, you know, good young players. Ali Ali, obviously, and Kane being the biggest among the bunch. But I think Pochettino's come in. He's taught these guys how to play soccer. He has them playing beautiful soccer. He's got the team hitting on all cylinders. And unfortunately, they're just not deep enough to challenge these other teams. Mm-hmm. Because you're talking, again, just like Atletico going up against Real Madrid and Barcelona. Mm-hmm. You got Tottenham, who's got a nice budget, but you got the Sheikhs at Man City. You got the Glazers at Man United. You got Abramovich at Chelsea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got, you know, even the what do you call them? Liverpool, Liverpool, Henry's from the Red Sox, whatever it is, I forget what it is.
Yeah,
you got teams with a tremendous budgets. Amount of money that they could go out and pluck the best players from around the world, or you know, some of the most expensive players from around the world. Mm-hmm. In Tottenham right now, it's hard when you're I'm just throwing a name out there, right? When you're James Rodriguez and you got Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, and Tottenham knocking on your door. I mean, the Man United's and the Chelsea's of the world. You know, even Man City, because they're gonna outspend everybody else to get you. And Tottenham just won't be able to compete with those teams. But nonetheless, they've been a terrifically run club. Pochettino, to me, has absolutely made the difference. But, you know, just be happy with second place right now. I mean, it's not a bad start. And it's a team that's still young enough, and with a couple of pieces here and there, they should be able to be back next season and challenging once again.
And if you also consider, like Cristiano just said, talked about the, you know, the budget of the other club, Man City, Liverpool, Manchester United, Chelsea, you want to give it to Tottenham because before the season started, nobody would have thought that Tottenham would be second place at this time of the season. Pep Guardiola came with a very, you know, humongous CV, spent a lot of money, spent about £170 million in the transfer market. Mourinho, second, spent about £140 million, spent half of that, in fact, almost all that money on one player, Paul Pogba. And of course, you know, you can go on and on. But Tottenham is here above these two teams. in second spot, even though they're not going to win the league, but they will be proud that they have come ahead of the big spenders with the big coaches, Mourinho and Pep Guardiola. And of course, Champions League spot is guaranteed, something they didn't achieve last season. So when you look at it, you also see that they've made progress. Pochettino, like your Cristiano said, is not a huge, he's not a coach with a big name, but he understands the game. His footballing brain is awesome. He's dynamic. His team play football that you like to watch, something that is appealing to the eyes. And like he said, that's the kind of coach Barca would like to have, because it's someone that will just plug in. Barcelona have a plug and play system. Pochettino will understand. He knows how to, you know, play, you know, plug and play that Barca system.
Yeah.
And overall, I think that Tottenham, the project looks like if they continue, it will eventually come good.
Yeah, and they got a new stadium. They'll be opening up a new stadium.
Yeah,
new stadium is so important.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, it is, because look at what it did. Look at what the new stadium did to Juve. I mean, these new stadiums are huge if executed, right?
You know? Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think that kind of linked with my point about Atletico, how there is that kind of small club stigma, and how Pochettino's got to work extra hard to defeat that stigma. But I'm not sure he would go to Barcelona because of the Espanyol history, but I would definitely like to see him at Barcelona. So I want to touch up on my last point. Champions League final going to be in, I guess, less than a month now. Certainly looks like it's going to be Juventus against Real Madrid. Who's winning this? I'll just say that neither Atletico nor Monaco pull off a historic remontada. Who wins this?
Who will fire the first shot?
You know what? I'll go.
I was talking. I had it on mute.
Oh, okay.
I apologize for that.
Yeah.
I was saying it's hard to go against either team, man. I mean, Juventus comes in with a tremendous defensive record. They haven't given up a goal in the Champions League in God knows how long. So they're definitely tough to break down. But then on the other side, you got Cristiano Ronaldo. And it's hard to shut him down and to say they're going to be shut down. So it's going to be a very interesting Champions League final. And as much as I want to say it's going to be Juve, it's just hard. It's hard for me to go against Cristiano.
So hard.
This seems to have been his year with Portugal winning the Euro. It's just like when you go against Cristiano, he finds a way to shut you up and he finds a way to come through. So – It's tough, but
is that your Facebook bio, Cristiano? sorry, bad joke. Terrible joke. I'm sorry. Look, Buffon gunning for his last. This is going to be his second last year. So really, kind of last chance saloon for Gianluigi Buffon to win the Champions League final. But then you've also got, you know, it's so hard because, look, this Real Madrid team is trying to win two finals. One final is winning their first league title since 2012. The other final is winning the Champions League. But it's not even just one final. It's this team has been so hungry throughout this entire season. Because I think they know they have the potential to be the first ever team to win back-to-back Champions League titles, and
no,
so
in the new Champions League format.
Not the European Cup format, but in the new, you know, since what Milan, you know, back in '89, I think this could be the first ever team to go back-to-back. So they've got one. I think Barcelona are not going to drop a single point. So they're keeping the pressure on Madrid, and Madrid have to keep on, you know, pedal to the metal to win that league title. But they've also got this extremely compact and well-organized Juventus side who have been phenomenal this season. I do think these are the two best teams in the world, so
But you know what? Zidane has the luxury, though, week in, week out, changing his lineup. As you
exactly.
see, he's played what they call their B team, and they're slapping everyone around, and then they play their stars at home, and they go on a roll with the youngsters. So they'll be very rested. They'll be well rested for that game.
Oh, no doubt.
And Real Madrid, think about this. They've won 11 Champions Leagues in their history, and only twice have they won the league title and the Champions League. So if they pull it off this year, it'll be the third time in their tremendous history to do so. So it's not exactly a feat that you know, they've done much.
But I also feel like, before I let Omar touch up on this, I think that this is – winning this Champions League would be like winning three Champions Leagues, because it's not just winning the European Cup. It's winning back-to-back, and that is – that's arguably the hardest thing in professional sports, honestly. When you look at how many teams – are gunning for it. You know, NBA, it's always the Cavs and the Warriors. And, you know, that's kind of the same for other sports. But with the Champions League, you've got all these teams well-prepared, sought out to win this. You've got 90, maybe 120 minutes on a field in Cardiff against the greatest goalkeeper of all time, for my marbles. It just seems so it seems so impossible to fathom. Yet, you know, I thought that Atletico would win against Real Madrid only because it seemed so impossible to fathom that an elite team like Atletico would lose four straight times in Europe to their crosstown rivals. But, you know, I'm going to stick with my prediction from 2016 that Juventus will finally win the Champions League. Omar.
Well, I mean, with due respect to Real Madrid, I think that the best team, you know, so far have been Juventus. They've been almost unplayable. Look at their statistics; they've not considered a goal in the knockout stage. And I mean, beating Barcelona, over two legs, and not conceding a goal, scoring three, is huge. I mean, look at Real Madrid against Barcelona this season. For all the talk about Real Madrid, you could see how you could see the weakness of that team when they came up against Barcelona. And whether you like it or not, that is the best team they've played this season. Yes, they've beaten big teams. I'm not taking anything away from them. But, yeah. I mean, you could say that Barcelona were unfortunate to have come up against Juventus. If Barcelona had gone
they were.
The Atletico or Monaco route, of course, Barcelona will still be in the Champions League. You know, so I think that barring any catastrophe, Juve will win this season's Champions League. The fact that no team has ever won the Champions League back-to-back could also play out. There's something spiritual about the Champions League, you know. And of course, you know, Juve were in the final 3 years ago, lost to Barca, you know, and they continued grinding. And look at how they've reached the final. I mean, we can say they have reached the final because it's almost unlikely that Monaco would turn the two goals deficit around in Turin and qualify for the final. Yeah. So I personally think, yes, Ronaldo is almost unbeatable right now. But against Juventus, we're going to see a totally new challenge. This is a complete defense. Cellini, Bonucci... Yeah. Bazagli, a defense team with a combined age of over 130 years old, if I'm not mistaken.
So, do they win in full time? Do they win in extra time? Do they win on penalties? What do you think?
Real Madrid, you've got to go beyond 90 minutes. It's a difficult team to beat.
It is.
I think it will go beyond 90 minutes.
Cristiano?
I think that Cristiano will be neutralized in those kind of games.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, Cristiano was fantastic against Bayern. We know, you know.
I mean, and Atletico, you know, and Napoli. To be fair, he's been just look. I like Messi more. I think Messi's better, but just Cristiano. There's something about this Cristiano that is for me. It's been kind of reinvented. I honestly think from a pure footballing point of view, I think he's playing his best football since the Mourinho days.
I'm not gonna get involved in who's better, Messi or Ronaldo. I think they're both tremendous football. Just enjoy it. But here's the thing with Ronaldo, right? And I'm not the biggest Ronaldo fan, even though he's named after me and I am Portuguese like he is, okay? Yeah. One thing about Ronaldo is every time you doubt him,
he just bites you in the ass.
That's why I can't count him out. You know, Bayern Munich, he wasn't playing exceptionally well. He hadn't scored in four consecutive games, whatever, as long as run at Real Madrid since he's arrived without goals. And he goes out there and scores five goals in two games. Then Atletico is the defense. Atletico is the team that's going to lock him down because, you know, Simeone's system, the tremendous defensively, there's no way he's going to score. He only scores a hat trick. You know what I mean? Every time you doubt the guy, he comes through. So that's why to me, I can't. Look, tremendous job by Juventus. Defensively, they're the best team in Europe.
But it's
hard for me to go against Real Madrid because they do have world-class players. Yeah. And I don't think Juventus, even though Juventus has been tremendous and they shut down Barcelona, Real Madrid, I feel. It's going to make very interesting TV, man.
Yeah.
But I quickly want to differ on the fact that Ronaldo has been playing his best football this season. I think that what Ronaldo has done in the last two Champions League games have kind of made a lot of people to think he's been in the best form of his life. Ronaldo have had this season for me has been his poorest season. When you look at his stats, in the La Liga, he's gone many games without goals. In the Champions League, he had four goals before playing Bayern. You can imagine. Last season, Ronaldo had he had 17 goals. He scored 10 in the knockout stage. You understand? So, I mean, Ronaldo has not had a beautiful season. But somehow, that's his season has been turned around by the game against Bayern and Atletico. Against Juve, if he can do the same, then of course that will write off all of the average performances he has put up earlier in the season.
But you know how it is, man. You want to be informed when games count. And right now, it's when the big games are up, and that's when it's informed. It goes both ways.
I agree with you. But I can put my money that against Juve, we're not going to see all of those because it's a final. Finals are always tighter, cagier. I mean, the biggest players hardly turn up in finals. Even Messi, in the finals where he has scored, yes, he scored. Okay, I think that's a different ball game entirely because against Manchester United on both finals, Messi was out of this world. I mean, I think I can say that. You know, but in finals, you don't get those blistering display by the best players, you know, like you've seen before the final. Final games are always, they're always 2kg.
Yeah, they're always ugly soccer. Both teams are afraid to make mistakes and come forward and opening up in the back. Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe if Real Madrid will win, maybe it's maybe Benzema or Bale. It might not even be Ronaldo if they will.
Really?
I don't know, but sometimes finals are like that.
No, they are. I think that it is really – finals are always a test of kind of alpha males. They're usually a test of who's the first to crack, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Juventus winning in penalties because – I don't know. I don't like Keylor Navas in goal for this. He's been in pretty bad form. And I think Buffon, he's not going to lose. I mean, I did say that in the Euros last summer. Yeah. And they did lose. But, you know, this is different. This is the Champions League.
That's also something. For Buffon, I like Juventus to win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I respect what Real Madrid have done. They're a tremendous club. For me, the best team in the world. But I just think with these external factors, you know, I think with just this entire team, this entire organization doing everything they possibly can to send Buffon off with a Champions League, it's not going to be beaten. It's not going to be beaten.
That's true.
I say 2-1 Real Madrid. Higuain with the goal for Juventus.
He's going Ronaldo. I'm going to say 1-1, 1-1, 4-2 Juventus winning on penalties.
Sloppy game for Ronaldo, and he comes in late in the 88th. He finds a way late in the 88th minute. In the 88th minute to stick the dagger.
Sealing the Ballon d'Or, sealing the 2017
Absolutely.
Oma, what are you going to say?
I mean, I doubt it. I think Juventus are a superior side. Defensively, they are more organized. And that's a key part in such a final.
And Allegri is a better coach than Zidane, to be fair.
I mean, well,
I mean, all Zidane's done since he's been there is win the Champions League and he's about to win La Liga.
Exactly. You know what I mean?
So, in his very short career, in his very short career, all right? Look, you're probably right. He might, at the end of the day, be a better coach, but we don't know what Zidane is. Zidane, all he's done is won. So,
yeah.
I agree. That's why I was hesitant to agree with that. If it's it might be a more experienced coach.
Well, Zidane is a great coach. I think we have to give him credit.
Coaches are rated by what they have won. And that's why people don't respect Arsene Wenger, even though I disagree with all of them. You know, everything cannot just be based on title. Di Matteo have won the Champions League. Di Matteo. He has won the Champions League.
Roberto Di Matteo.
Di Matteo.
Yeah.
Roberto.
He has won the Champions League, my friends. Can we now say he's greater than Arsene Wenger because he won the Champions League by playing 4 games or 5 games, if I'm not mistaken? So, you know.
And Munich, you know, like, choked, man. Munich choked.
It's a night I will never want to remember. I was so angry.
Yeah.
That was the Champions League that the worst team won.
What, in 20. What? Which year is this?
Chelsea. When Chelsea beat Munich.
Oh, 2012.
In Munich. Yeah.
You know, to be fair, I mean, Drogba getting the send-off was pretty nice, even though I wanted Bayern to win. But yeah, Drogba is a hero, African hero, and hero of football, too. But yeah, I'm going to say Juventus. Oma says Juventus.
Juventus.
Cristiano is the odd man out here. The odd Cristiano out here saying Real Madrid. Anything else?
Can I also tell you why I don't want Real Madrid to win?
Hey, go ahead.
I'm not being biased. a lot of persons have said if Ronaldo wins the Champions League, he should win Ballon d'Or. And I'm like, take away these last two games. Ronaldo has not been better than Messi this season. Take away these last two Champions League games.
Yeah, but you know what? You listen, and I hate to make this argument, Omar. I hate to make this argument, right? Look, man, this goes back to a few years ago, right? And I had these arguments on the airwaves at Sirius XM. When Mourinho was at Real Madrid, if you guys recall, Cristiano Ronaldo set the La Liga goal record. Right? And Messi won La Liga. And when it came down to the voting, the voters said, well, it's about winning.
Yeah, that's true.
It's about winning. Yeah. Hold on. It's about winning. So they gave it to Messi. The very next season, Ronaldo wins La Liga and Messi sets the goal record in La Liga. Well, now they gave it to Messi again. And see, I have a problem. This is a double standard. Like, wait a minute. So is it about winning or is it not about winning? There's a double standard. So with that
it's not about winning. It's about voting.
but that was what they were categorizing it as. When Ronaldo set the record. So I don't like that, man. And Omar, man, let me tell you a little bit about myself. I've become a Ronaldo supporter because of that. Yeah. Look, if I had to pick a player for my team, as a player on the field.
Okay, that's good. Okay.
Off the field, I would take Ronaldo all day, every day. Mm-hmm. Okay,
and it's tough for you because he's a Sportingista, you know.
No, exactly. But that's why. Look, I've never been a fan of his. But now, as I've seen these double standards with the Messi saga, I've become a Ronaldo defender. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like there is no athlete, and this goes across every sport. Okay, there is no athlete in the world that's more charitable than Cristiano Ronaldo. Okay, he gives more than any, but yet you want to come at me and hate on him because, you know, he smirks at you in the camera and he looks arrogant. Mm-hmm. Where all the guy does is give to others. We're Messi on the other side, and I'm not trying to throw him under the bus, but I've been around people that had a couple negative things to say about him, a couple of his teammates, but yet everybody lets that go. I mean, could you imagine Ronaldo going into the Bernabeu, scoring a goal, taking off his shirt? What would you say after the game? He's arrogant. But Messi did it. Oh, it was cool. So I don't. You understand what I'm saying, Omar? That's why I started to defend Ronaldo a little bit.
I understand you.
And look, Ronaldo, I think if he wins the Champions League, wins La Liga with the European Cup for Portugal, it's going to be like, look, man, it's hard to go against the guy.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That's why I don't want him to win the Champions League.
Totally agree, man. But Ronaldo, all the haters, all the Ronaldo haters, and myself included, I used to be a big Ronaldo hater. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to speak to many footballers from all around the world, and some of his teammates and some of his competitors, and I have not come across one teammate that's had one bad thing to say about the guy. I mean, that speaks volumes. I mean, you got a guy like Jesse. You got a guy like Jesse, Hesse, whatever you want to. Hesse, Jesse, the kid now, he's at Las Palmas now. Was that PSG struggle?
He's a reggaeton artist now.
He said when he got called up to Real Madrid, he was going to make his 18 debut. He said, man, practice was at 9. I showed up at 7 a.m. because I wanted to impress everybody. By the time I showed up to the training ground, Ronaldo was already sweating, working out. I said, well, what am I going to do? I mean, Roy Keane, everybody, Paul Scholes, all these guys say the guy has a tremendous work ethic. Seems a little bit arrogant, but you know what, man? Most of these people and journalists, okay, and hosts and evaluators and you know, guys that do TV and stuff like that, commentators, I mean, they've never met the guy. To call him an arrogant, call him, you know, an a-hole, if you never met someone, I think it's kind of rude. You know, get to meet the person first. Meet the person first. If you know him personally, like I hear when people come at me, oh, Messi's an a-hole. Oh, Ronaldo's, have you met him? No. Oh, but he looks it. So you're judging him based on his looks.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's prejudicial. That's not good. Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah, I think that it is tough. You know, I know I said that was the last discussion, but I wanna get to this one point. Because I think that if Barcelona win La Liga, then Messi will probably get Ballon d'Or. Then, if Real Madrid win the Champions League, then Ronaldo will probably get. You know, there's a lot of different permutations because I feel like for the first time in many years, this Ballon d'Or, which you know, of course, will happen in January, is very much up in the air. To the point where it might not even be either. Messi or Ronaldo, but
that's not possible.
I was waiting for you to finish your point to say I got a solution. I got a solution for this. Omar, let me know what you think. Omar, I got a solution for this. How about you grab the freaking trophy that you give to both of them every single year because they're the two best footballers in the world. There's no one even close.
They're the two best footballers of all time as well.
I don't know about all time. I mean, my boy Maradona.
As long as they still exist, it will be difficult to find another player that is qualified to win the Ballon d'Or. Even if they don't play well, everyone says they are the best. That's the problem. Even if they don't play well,
I mean, everyone says
they are the best.
The last guy to get in between them in the Ballon d'Or was Kaká. And think about where he's at now. I mean, he's an afterthought.
He's at Orlando.
I know, but I'm saying, think about where he's at now, football wise. He's not even at that level. And these guys have kept that consistency for so long. It's a tremendous job by both guys. Yeah. Just give them both a trophy and say, you know what, you two are the best. Here you go, kiss and make up and get out of here because people spend too much time hating on each. You know, if you're a Messi guy, you hate on Ronaldo. If you're a Ronaldo guy, you hate on Messi. Why don't you just enjoy both of these guys? Because you know what, when these guys retire, we're gonna be begging for Ronaldos and Messis. Because there's no one right now that's Ronaldo's Messi.
Exactly.
Neymar's good. Dybala is good. There's good players, but they're not Messi and Ronaldo.
Never.
So enjoy these guys while you can.
They are not as decisive as these two. They are enjoyable, but not as decisive as these two.
Yeah. Ronaldo is, you know, 32 and scoring hat tricks against Atletico and Bayern. You know, as much as I loved Kaká, at Messi's age, he was sitting on the bench for Mourinho, so I definitely think there are certain levels between the two. And, yeah, at the end of the day, all you have to do is just appreciate both, honestly.
Exactly. I think that was better.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, whoever wins the Ballon d'Or this year, probably be Ronaldo or Messi, it will be well-deserved. It'll be whoever wins the trophies, honestly. That's all that the historians are going to remember at the end of the day is who wins the trophies. You know, that's why Ronaldo won it certain years. That's why Messi won it certain years. I like Messi, but I, you know, totally respect just Ronaldo's work ethic. I think that, you know, there was once a phrase, Messi amazes me, Ronaldo inspires me. And, you know, they do the same for each, but I think that kind of defines them.
I think I like that description. That's exactly what Messi does to me.
Exactly.
He amazes me. It's just too beautiful to watch. Ronaldo inspires because of the energy level and the hard work. So you have to respect both of them for what they, you know, contribute to the game. You know, I like that. I like that.
100%. Messi rolls out of bed and the talent, he trips over talent. Ronaldo has to work at it. But either way, man, they're both tremendous players, man. I mean, what we've seen now, think about these. Think about this. These guys, are both of them, okay? They're scoring 50 goals a year in all competitions. Yeah. I mean, that's never – I mean, that's done what? One guy in across all leagues would do it once every 5 years? Now these guys do it every single year for the last 10 years. I mean, it's been crazy.
Exactly.
It's been – they've been putting up astronomical numbers, you know, and just to sit here –
And guess what? Guess what? If you say the La Liga is weak, in quote, he's done this both in the La Liga and in the Champions League. Imagine that.
Imagine and not just that, but if La Liga is so weak, why is it that a Spanish team's winning the Champions League and a Spanish team keeps winning the Europa League? I mean, if it's so weak, they're able to beat everyone else around the world, but it's so weak.
Exactly. I mean, that says it all. That says it all. You know, people like to be mischievous sometimes, especially when it comes to football. When you're discussing football, sometimes it's difficult to discuss it because you are discussing with people who are discussing from an emotional standpoint. And there's nothing you will tell someone who has made up his mind. That's why sometimes in football discussions, the fact take the back seat, emotions take the front seat.
Omar, it's so weak. It's so weak. But yet, they go up against German champions. They slap them around. English teams, forget about it because they don't even make it this far down the Champions League. They don't even make it this far down the competition. So when they play the other country's best, they slap them around. So what would they do? What would they do with the mid-table teams?
Exactly. I
mean, people just want to knock, just to knock. I think right now, look, La Liga is a step above everybody else. The EPL is a tremendous entertainment league. Anyone could beat anyone at any given Sunday. But I think that's a lot to do with each team's problems. I don't think the English teams are as deep as everyone makes them out to be.
You're right.
La Liga, man per man, I think is the best football in the world. Right now they have the two best footballs in the world. And I think Sir Alex Ferguson said it all. Sir Alex Ferguson said the best league in the world is La Liga because they got Ronaldo and Messi. We got to wait until they retire and then we'll talk about it.
And apart from Ronaldo and Messi, they got the guys coming up next. Neymar, the guys after them are all
Asensio. Yeah.
The Neymars, the Suarez of this world, the guy Bills. Who is better than Suarez in England as far as goal scoring?
Nobody. Nobody.
I mean, exactly. you got Isco. You got so many young players throughout on both teams. Real Madrid,
Atletico too.
Atletico got a lot of good, but not at that. I mean,
not at that level.
Isco, and I mean, you got guys. Dennis Suarez at Barcelona that doesn't play a lot. That would go to any team in England and start. I mean, you got Rakitic, who's a player that a lot of people don't talk about, right? Rakitic would go to Italy. I mean, to Italy and Spain, and I mean, in England and Germany. So, I mean, you have so many guys. Afterthought, you got Kovacic at Real Madrid that would start on any team. You could go on and on and on and on and on. They're stacked. They got the good young players coming up. They're able now. Real Madrid's going after the 16-year-old at Flamengo. They're supposed to be the next Brazilian sensation. They got Odegaard. They got Odegaard that could play. I mean, we've seen the kid play. He's not a superstar like they made him out to be, but he's a very good. I mean, he's 17 years old. The kid's got nothing but talent. He could play at most of the teams. He doesn't even crack the roster. He doesn't make the 20, match squad roster. I mean, they're so stacked, it's unbelievable. La Liga is in good hands, man. They do a great job of developing players. And the EPL, it is what it is.
Guys, can I quickly add to what you just said? Yeah. I wrote something many years ago that the difference between the La Liga and the EPL is that the EPL has got so much money coming in. And because of that, the teams don't take their time to do proper scouting. They just buy players like the guy who earns a big salary and doesn't care how he spends his money because he knows that there's so much money coming in at the end of the month compared to the guy who earns maybe $1,000 and he must be very prudent. So when he wants to spend, he tries to spend less but get the same result with the guy who spends more. The La Liga teams buy the biggest in the world, one or two, and they build them around other players groomed within. That's why the La Liga teams play better football because apart from buying big names, Real Madrid, Barcelona, they still build their team around players from within. And they come up with a footballing philosophy that is above all. You see the English teams, They look rich, colorful, and glamorous, but very disjointed. You watch Manchester United play. Very disjointed team. You watch
Omar. Yeah. You, my friend, are 100% correct, but take this into account. You got to take this into account real quick.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you an example, right? Which adds to what you're saying. I'm adding to what you're saying. Okay. Not discrediting. Okay. I'm adding to what you're saying. Okay. When the Manchester Uniteds, the Chelseas, the Bayern Munichs, the AC Milans, the Juventus, when they go out and they get, you know, the Paul Pogba, the Eden Hazard, the Dybalas, right?
Yeah.
they're able to build these great young players and develop these guys into world-class players, right? Then you get a Real Madrid, Barcelona, who's able to get a young Sergio Ramos and keep him for 10 years.
Yeah.
Hold on real quick. Barcelona get a Messi and keep him for 10 years. Now, Man United, Juventus, AC Milan, they don't have that luxury. You know why? Because when Barcelona and Real Madrid come calling,
you
can't turn those guys
down. That's it. That's
You're leaving. You're leaving. So they're not able to keep the Messi for 10 years.
That's
true. Eden Hazard, there's a lot of rumors he'll be joining Real Madrid next year. Dybala, it's a matter of time before Barcelona, Real Madrid gets Dybala.
Exactly.
So that's a disadvantage
that's
to the
true.
English teams. It's a that's huge true. Disadvantage. Where Barcelona, look, man, when those teams come calling, even though you could be the happiest dude in the world.
Look at Suarez. Look at Gareth Bale.
Yeah, you could be the happiest dude in the world. You can love your wife all you want, right? but when a hot celebrity comes, you know, when Giselle comes knocking on your door, you're not going to be like, hey, Giselle, I'm busy. You know, like, hey, I'm Sofia Vergara. Yeah, I'm busy. You're opening the door. You're like, yo, I got to at least answer the phone, right? You got to at least answer. And so that's what happens here, man. That's exactly what happens. And, I mean, look at Chelsea. Look at Chelsea.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw out a number because I don't want to be incorrect, but I believe, man, it's like 3 or 4 years in a row. Don't quote me on this, but I know that they've won a bunch of years in a row at the youth level in England, right? They just beat Man City once again.
Yeah. Yeah.
They obviously have the best school in England, right? They're developing the best young players. How many of those guys are actually playing? Forget starting. But actually playing on that team. They don't because English teams have so much money that if they spend $35 million on Cristiano Oliveira, and Cristiano Oliveira sucks, they'll just turn around and spend another $35 million on Omar because Omar might be better than Cristiano. Where Atletico Madrid can't throw away $35
million. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Atletico has to be sure. When they buy Cristiano, you know, they could miss on one guy. But they can't miss on 3 and 4. Chelsea misses every year.
Analogy.
Man United spent $100 million on Pogba, who has not been anywhere close to the player everyone expected. And nobody, Man United's like, okay, we're going to buy Griezmann, Rules, and James next year for $500 million. They don't care. Like, let's go. So
that's correct. That's a wonderful analogy. Very wonderful analogy. I mean, I'm from Nigeria. I mean, it's a country where there's more people living below the poverty line. I come from a humble background. I know how to use less money to achieve the same result that the rich guy will achieve. So that's why I am able to, you know, to marry this to also the same philosophy of the English teams and the Spanish teams. When you don't have much money, you watch how you spend and also try to get the same result. And it's possible. Some people think that the best things, the best things are expensive. But sometimes you can also get those same things for cheap.
And
look, in a lot of ways, it hurts the English game itself. It hurts the English national team because they're not going to develop Tommy Smith, right? Mm-hmm. When they got Eden Hazard, who's a better player right now, and you know you're gonna get results right now. So when it comes to national team, that's why you see England so dysfunctional at times. You haven't seen them. Be the power that everyone anticipates they're going to be in World Cups and Euros. That's why you don't see, for example.
And that's why Portugal's doing so well.
Well, exactly.
Exactly.
But look, when you have guys like Frank Lampard, right, who's a legend at Chelsea, Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney, they're tremendous players at their clubs. Then you see these guys together, and they're not the same players. You know what the reason is? Because every single one of those players on their team, they had other stars carrying the team and other stars playing around. It was easy for these guys to just slot in, right? Lampard, all you got to do is just run around in the midfield. He's going to get a ball. He's going to get a shot at one point. Now, you got to give him credit for putting it on goal, But you had other players around. Like, he was just another player. Now, when it comes to England, they put on the Three Lions shirt, and now they're expected to be the ones to create for – and they're like, wait, I'm not a creator. No. I get to the end of balls that Deco's and Michael Ballack's and Drogba's and Fernando Torres out. Like, all of a sudden, they can't carry the weight.
Yeah.
So it hurts the English game in that aspect because they're going out and buying the best players from around the world, with the exception – I mean, the best players that Real Madrid and Barcelona don't want.
Yeah. But with the exception of these two, they buy the best players. We can give it to them.
Yeah, if Real Madrid and Barcelona don't want you, an English team's going to get you. But if they want you, you're not going there. So it hurts because they're not developing these kids. And where Portugal – look, the guys are getting young exposure at the three Portuguese clubs. They're getting – you know, they're 19, 20, like Renato Sanches, 18 years old, playing in Champions League football for Benfica, getting great experience, then gets a call up to the national team, and they're expected to perform. The young players, and they're being put to the test very young. And then when they make the move – yeah, you haven't seen the Renato Sanches yet, but still young. Eventually, I think he'll come good. And you just have a tremendous history of guys coming out of Portugal because they're all playing at the highest levels with tremendous, pressure on them. You're talking about playing in a classic or in a derby, 50,000, 65,000. I mean, there's only, three stadiums in all of England that host 65,000. You know what I mean? These guys are playing in 30 and 20,000 seat stadiums. So,
exactly.
You know, in Portugal, they're so accustomed to playing under pressure, man. So that definitely helps. But England, look, they have the money. They have the money to put into place into development. It's just a matter of time. But as long as they keep getting these other stars, it's going to be very hard for them.
That's true.
That is true. Yeah. Very well said, Cristiano. I think that ends it. I want to thank – by the way, first of all, I want to tell everybody to check out Cristiano's other podcast, Benfica Podcast, very well-run show about Benfica. I want to thank my guests, Oma Akatugba, my great Nigerian journalist, as well as my Oyinbo brethren, Cristiano Oliveira. Pleasure to have you both on today.
It was great having this wonderful conversation about football. I've learned a lot, you know, and I hope to do this again.
Yeah, I still hope to do this again, man. Keep an eye out for what's coming up from the Benfica podcast, from Breaking the Lines, from my man Omar, who now I've spoken to him for an hour, and I feel like he's been a lifelong friend. So definitely going to keep these chats. Yeah, look, you know, thank very you. Looking forward to doing this again, man. It's a lot of fun.
Looking forward to having you both on again very soon. Thank you so much. This has been Breaking Lines. I'm your host, Zach Lowy. We'll be back on Friday. Thank you very much. Goodbye.